anyone who has dreamt about having a baby, anyone who has watched a pregnant mum or a woman who, a couple who are trying to have a baby, the glow that comes about them, the excitement, it's just, it's obvious. You can tell the happiness. But what happens when something goes wrong? What if it goes wrong again and again and you just can't have babies? It's a very difficult situation to be in. It's also a very difficult situation to be on the outskirts of. In other words, what if someone that you love, a friend, a sister, a daughter, maybe it's your wife, finds out that they're infertile? What role can you play? What is the journey that person has to go through? Do they have to take it alone? Or can you help them along? And how much? To help us with this little chat, we have on the line Dr. Alison Sampson. She is a clinical psychologist and also a member of the Fit Pregnancy Advisory Board, and Tertia Albertine, who struggled to have a baby herself. Now, if you were listening at the beginning of the last hour, I was chatting a little bit about Tertia's website and the number of hits that she gets. We're going to get into that website and just the popularity of it a little bit later. But ladies, first off, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
When I was reading some of your stuff, Tertia, I got a little bit not confused, because I mean, I say we're talking about infertility and then I talk about your children, so it's a little bit of a jump. For the purposes of today's discussion, what are we defining infertility as?
Infertility is defined as the inability to conceive after 12 months of unprotected sex. So, in other words, if you don't fall pregnant within 12 months of trying, then that's when you take yourself off to go and see someone who specializes in infertility.
Okay, so even if you're on in vitro, that's certainly, we're covering that as well today.
Yep.
What are some of the difficulties, firstly, that we see, Doctor, from your point of view, and then we'll get to Tertia in a moment, the difficulties that are associated with infertility?
Well, you know, I think the interesting thing about infertility is that it is basically a medical condition, an inability to conceive, but the psychological effects are absolutely profound for most women who find themselves in a situation of being infertile. And basically, you know, it's very disempowering to be have fertility. And I think it's really interesting how relationships get affected in many ways, the couple relationship. People often feel out of control as they begin the process of trying to get treatment for infertility. And many people who have been through the treatment will describe the psychological effects as far worse than the physical side effects.
Mm.
So it has a profound effect, you know, in the whole set of relationships that a person has. And I think it's quite deeply linked to our perception as women. You know, most women will have an idea that they will have a child one day, even if they're not necessarily broody at the time. So to have a perception of yourself that you will be childbearing, and then to be confronted with this reality that you cannot bear a child, that you are infertile, is a tremendously hard thing to come to terms with. It's a huge loss. And, you know, I can detail some of the feelings if you would like me to do that now.
Please.
Okay, basically, you know, what you go through is a series, and I think, Tertia, in your article in the magazine you wrote that, you know, you can be very prickly and withdrawn. You can also feel very alienated, and that alienation comes from loss, that you're not, you know, you don't see yourself as becoming a mother. And, of course, if you're faced with permanent infertility, then it's readjustment in your whole life on having to accept that you're not going to, you know, biologically produce children and what the options are then. Now, when you're dealing with loss, you have all the same feelings that you have with other kinds of loss. So you go through a mourning period, you have anger, you have a sense of wanting to bargain, try to bargain around it. And the psychological task is to try to resolve the loss and to, you know, to persevere. If you're having the treatment, the psychological side is to persevere with the treatment, which can be very traumatic. And I'm sure that Tertia can tell us a lot about that.
Tertia?
Absolutely agree with everything you've said. I mean, it is... The emotional side of it is probably the hardest thing to have to go through. The physical stuff is tough, but the emotional side is just incredibly hard, because you go through that loss cycle for each cycle that you try. And there's just such crushing lows. And it starts affecting every single aspect of your life. And infertility is such an insidious disease. It really does. It affects your mental health, your emotional health, your relationships, your finances. I mean, it's expensive. And so there's so much riding on each in vitro cycle.
Yes.
That the losses are massive. And no, we're not even talking about if you get pregnant and then you lose the pregnancy, which is a whole another aspect.
Yes. And I think that, you know, women who are going through this treatment are also very vulnerable to depression because of the cycles of being hopeful and then not having successful treatment, so therefore going through loss cycles again. There's also the whole question of the medication that is required to get the body to be more fertile, what effect that has on the emotions.
Absolutely.
And then I think there's very often this persistent, sad, anxious, or empty mood, which is a symptom of depression that goes with surviving these infertility issues. So I think that, you know, a lot of women who go through this treatment are extremely vulnerable to depression. And, you know, if you'd like to, I could give you some of the symptoms of depression. Do you think that would be helpful?
That would. Thank you, Doctor.
Okay. You can basically have a kind of depression where you're restless and irritable. Mm-hmm. And your friends would pick up that you're irritable around issues to do that, you know, that are child related if you're having this problem. You might have appetite gain or loss. You might even have thoughts of suicide or how do I have a life without a child. You might have difficulty concentrating and making decisions. You might have difficulty sleeping. You would certainly have decreased energy and feeling of being slowed down. And then, you know, a lot of feelings of hopelessness and pessimism, which each time you go through a cycle of unsuccessful treatments, you would have more of that.
Gets
so,
worse
you know,
and worse.
Going through many cycles can be, you know, obviously very difficult.
Yeah.
Trisha, I don't know if you'd like to comment.
Yes.
Have you been through how many cycles before you were pregnant?
Nine.
Okay. What did that actually do to you?
Well, it is, as you said, it is hard. And about 2 years into the process, My most overriding emotion was one of anger,
mm-hmm.
and it's an undirected anger. Mm-hmm. You know, I couldn't be angry at anyone else or anyone really. I was angry at God, at fate, at nature, at whatever it mm-hmm. was that I was in a predicament. And mm-hmm. I carried all this anger inside me, and I got very bitter
mm-hmm.
and very angry. And I ended up going into therapy, and I ended up on antidepressants, and they were fantastic. And I was so glad that I did that because it really, really affected me.
Yes. And did you work through some of those feelings with a therapist?
I did. Look, when someone suggested therapy to me, I wasn't keen because I thought, you know, it's not going to change my reality. I'm going to walk into the session infertile. I'm going to walk out infertile.
Mm.
But what it does, it gives you coping mechanisms. It's just good to talk about these things and realize also that you're not alone.
Yes. But isolation is a very common feeling. So, of course, that's where your website would be very popular to link people linking in with your story.
Yes, and that was
hearing their own story. Is that why you started it?
I did, and also as a bit of therapy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, writing was great therapy for me, and to connect to other infertile women. And the internet has been an absolute life and sanity saver for me.
Mm.
There's so much support out there.
Yes.
And that was really fantastic for me.
Tosha, tell me, can you ever separate the feelings? I mean, if you take us back to the trying over and over again, can you separate the, I hate my life right now, I'm so upset right now, I'm feeling hopeless, I'm not in control, those feelings for now versus the ones for the future? Are they two separate issues or do they kind of blur?
They do blur, and it's difficult not to become completely focused on that. People love to say just don't think about it. It is impossible not to think about it. It becomes your whole life, and you're just surrounded by reminders every day.
Mm.
Children and babies and pregnant people, and so it is very difficult to separate it out.
Okay, now we've also got an SMS from someone who said, you know, it's very insensitive to use the word infertility. You have to use fertility issues. And this is really kind of where this conversation, I would like it to go, is, you know, if I am offending, I don't even know that I'm offending because I don't know that that's an issue. And that must happen so often, Tisha. People just don't know what to do, what to say.
Absolutely. And I mean, and you are so prickly and so raw that you could say the most innocent thing and you would offend me.
Yeah.
So it is very hard being around someone who's infertile. because they're so angry and so bitter. Not everybody, but people who have normally been trying for a long time and who've done as many cycles as I've done.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
So it is very hard to be around someone. And I call myself infertile. I don't think it's particularly offensive because it's a medical condition. I think that's very important to realize.
Mm. Yeah, thanks for making that point. If I could just come in here. I think the term infertility is used in a medical sense as in terms of defining what the problem is. I don't think it really tells us anything about the person,
and
the woman or the couple.
Yes.
So it's not meant to be negative in that way. In the same way that you could describe someone who's had children as a breeder, someone
nice.
Who's successfully, someone who's fertile. So it's, you know, I think what's interesting though is that the person who SMS is clearly feeling very separated out and different from others. And I think that, you know, our society doesn't handle these problems very well. So you frequently get inappropriate things being said to couples with this problem. A lot of insensitivity, a lot of misunderstanding, and I think that causes all the angst and social discomfort.
And it just becomes this vicious cycle, I should imagine, the spiral just going down over and over again. You say something wrong, they become more prickly, so you try and make it right, and you say something more wrong. All right, well, let's call it pregnancy struggles, shall we? We're talking about couples who struggle to have a baby, the journey that the couple goes through together, the journey that the woman goes through, in vitro fertilization, what that entails. Certainly, I mean, pumping your body full of hormones is going to change you, even if it is only temporarily. What happens once you find out that you've lost the baby? Tersh was saying earlier, you don't even have to lose the baby, assuming you even get that far. But what happens if now you've got this baby, your hopes are up again, and you lose it? I know that, well, I haven't told you this, I should have. Tersh does a lot of writing. She's written a book, and we're going to talk about that. But she writes articles for Shape magazine. And in them, she talks about the different kinds of women, you know, that have been trying, either they're new to it, or they've been trying for a very long time, and how your personality changes. The thing we're really putting out there for you is, if you're feeling alone, if you're struggling to have a baby and you're not sure what your next step is, you're feeling lost and you'd like to speak to Dr. Allison and Tersha, please give us a call. And if you know someone who has struggled or is struggling to have a baby and you just feel like you have two left feet and your mouth is never going to be big enough, give us a call as well, because they can help you. You're not doing anything wrong. It's not you, but you know, we can help you to become a better friend or husband, lover, whatever it is. Give us a call on 883-0702. That's if you're in Johannesburg. If you're calling from Cape Town, 446-0567. You can also SMS us on 31702 in Gauteng or 31567 in the Cape. And finally, email leeb@capetalk.co.za or leeb@702.co.za. 22 minutes past 11. We're chatting to author Tersha Albertine, who struggled to have a baby, and Dr. Alison Sampson, a clinical psychologist who is also a member of the Fit Pregnancy Advisory Board, about fertility or lack thereof, pregnancy struggles, as we've decided we're going to call them. And we're taking your calls as well. Russell's in Funderbale Park. Hello, Russell.
Morning, everybody. We're a couple that tried for good on 8 years to start a family and were never successful. And we had to start initially with the IVF process. And one of the biggest problems that we experienced was the insensitivity of other women who had fallen pregnant, had a miscarriage, and then fallen pregnant again. And when they heard that we had these difficult ways, they always came up with the statement, oh, well, just try again. And this kind of almost broke my wife's spirit. But I must say, we tried, failed, and we eventually decided to, because I just couldn't see my wife going through this type of emotional roller coaster anymore. And, you know, the last failed attempt ended up with her being in a state that was really, really not nice. Mm-hmm. It was a very difficult time. So I think people must just be more empathetic to women who are struggling with becoming mothers.
Russell, thank you so much. It's a good point. Tersha, did you have that? Did you find people were just saying, oh, just, you know, try harder?
You get so much of that, and it's terrible. That, I mean, the favorite thing for people to tell you is just relax, just don't think about it. And it's so frustrating hearing that. You know, it's a medical condition. I can relax all I want. It's not going to make a difference. That is the worst thing you can tell an infertile person or person with fertility issues is just relax.
It'll happen when the time is right.
Yes, just don't think about it. Or this one, maybe it's not part of your plan to have children. How insensitive.
Yeah. But, I mean, not said nastily. Was it all said by well-meaning people?
No, it wasn't, you know. And if it's said by a well-meaning person, and there were many, you kind of take it from where it comes, and you try not to, I mean, you don't get angry with the person, but it does hurt. It stings.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things that I've read is quite interesting is that, you know, just in terms of what you shouldn't say, the magazine article that I was looking at said, don't say anything you wouldn't say to someone who'd lost a child if a friend tells you that she's having IVF.
Doctor,
so, you
know, just
if someone's child died, you wouldn't say, well, you weren't meant to have children, you know.
Absolutely.
So you can see how sensitive one actually has to be, and I think they're very glib and flippant remarks that people try to say, often to make it easier in the moment, but they end up being very stressful for the person on the receiving end.
Ultimately. Yeah, I suppose you're right. Although, as I was going to say, we were talking death on Thursday, and our guest actually said we don't do dead well either. So I would take that with a pinch of salt. Tertia, tell us your story. You've told us you had 9 attempts. How many years? I mean, Russell was saying they tried for 8 years.
Yeah, my heart goes out to them, really. I tried for 4 years, but it was 4 intensive years. I basically went through 9 infertility cycles, in vitro cycles, 3 pregnancy losses. I had 1 neonatal death, and then eventually my happy ending.
Mm.
And a couple of R100,000.
2 happy endings.
2 happy endings, yes, a double. Double blessing.
That's because you have twins now.
That's right.
Okay, and the hardest bit for you?
The hardest bit for me, I think, was about how all-consuming it became. You know, and trying to separate it out was just impossible for me. It was hard. I think probably the hardest emotional part for me was when I lost my son, who was born after my 8th IVF, but born prematurely.
Yeah.
That was really tough, and it was very scary doing my next cycle.
I was just going to say, now you see, that is such courage to say, and now I'm going to try again.
You know what? It was scarier not to do it, because the childless future was just the most terrifying thing to me. I couldn't face that.
Yeah. Oh, no, that is so brave. How long did you wait after your son passed away?
I wanted to do another one immediately, but my doctor said 4 months physically was the soonest I could do it. He wanted me to wait longer emotionally, but I said to him, I've been doing this for 4 years. I need to get this finished now.
Yeah.
So I waited for the required 4 months, and then I did my next one, and I was convinced it didn't work.
Yeah.
And it did. Times 2.
Oh, well done. I know I should be saying well done. I don't know what else to say. I'm just so happy for you. And afterwards?
I'm still very passionate about infertility and infertility issues. I write about it a lot. I write about it on my website. I've written my book, which is basically my story, my journey, from the beginning until it ends when my son came home from hospital, because my son stayed a little longer than my daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And it's meant to be for people who are infertile, or sisters or husbands or mothers of infertile people, to help them understand a little bit about what a person goes through emotionally through the process.
Yeah. From just a drugs point of view at this stage, you know, I know the IVF, it does nasty things to your system, especially, I mean, you had 4 years of intensive treatment by the sounds of things. Did you struggle with that? Was that one of the hard things? What sort of side effects did people see in you?
Not really, actually. That was, you know, in all honesty, compared to the emotional stuff, it was nothing. I would have done so much more. You know, an interesting thing I read is that infertility patients are second only to cancer patients in what they will endure to find a cure.
Mm.
And the pain, you inject yourself.
Mm.
it's nothing. It's nothing. It's what you'll do to achieve your dream.
Yes, I wasn't talking about you, Tisha. I was talking about, you know, for instance, your husband. When you pump a woman full of hormones, you know she becomes interesting, to say the least.
Oh, I don't think he dare not say anything about that.
To this day, he's just holding on to it. We've got a couple of SMSs that have come in. One says, trying to conceive became an obsession for me. I had 15 treatments in all.
Oh.
Doesn't say whether they were successful in the end or not.
I can understand that.
You can.
It's almost an addiction. It really is. And between cycles, you can't wait to get going again. Because between cycles, it feels like time is just rushing past you.
You see, now that's the thing. Does it become more as you go along? For example, women who try to have a baby and have a baby within 6 months, for example, and they don't think about it too much. As you say, every woman thinks about it at some point and goes, I'd like to have children one day, or most women, and a lot of men too, to be fair. Does it become every single time you want that child more and more? Does it grow inside you?
I don't think so. The want grows. The want is almost like a switch. That once you've switched on, it's very difficult to switch off.
Okay.
So it doesn't grow, but your focus, perhaps, your obsession, that grows.
Okay. Yeah, understandably so. We're looking at pregnancy struggles with Tisha Albertine. We're going to talk a little bit about her book and her website, which we've both mentioned. We're also chatting to Dr. Alison Sampson, who's a clinical psychologist, about pregnancy struggles, what women go through. And it's not just women, you know. It might be the woman's body, but men go through this too. So we'd like to hear from some of the men as well. 8830702 in Johannesburg, 4460567 in Cape Town. What do you do in a situation where the woman says, I can't go through this anymore, I've had enough, and now I want to stop, and the man really, really wants a baby? How does he deal with that? How do you as the wife come up with the courage to tell him, and what are men's reactions? We'd really like to see both sides. How was your husband, Tisha?
He was very supportive, but I think I shielded quite a lot from him. I was scared if he saw how much it affected me, he'd want to stop, just like your caller did early on. And so I shielded a lot from him. He left me in charge of everything, of organizing the next cycle, and he did his thing when he was told to do his thing.
Mm.
No, but he was great, though.
I love that he wouldn't dare.
He wouldn't dare.
Catherine, good afternoon. Morning.
Hi, good morning, Lee. Good morning, Tisha.
Hi.
Just want to say a very quick thing. I had a child very easily, luckily for me, and the birth was so horrendous that I was actually rendered infertile afterwards. And I found the hardest thing for me was all my friends having their second babies and people saying to me things like, I just look at my husband and I'm pregnant.
Oh, I can't stand it.
And I wanted to hit them.
I can't stand it. I hate it.
It's just so rude and so hurtful. And I did try an IVF program once, but we could only afford one session, unfortunately. But people would say things like as well, but you're all right, you've got one.
Yes, so you must be satisfied with just one child.
Yes, yes. And all that could be offered in the adoption line was children with very special needs, which at that stage I wasn't really ready for. I wanted my own perfect baby.
Mm.
And yeah, that's all I want to say. But I mean, one comes to terms with it, but it's a very hard journey. And I think that the not the stigma, I mean, the stigma is there as well, because people say things like, and when are you having your second one?
Mm.
You know, and you feel like screaming and saying, well, I'm not telling you all about me, but just think before you say these things to people, because it's like twisting a knife in your heart.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and that's all I want you to say.
Catherine, you know, I mean, just in defense, I would say something stupid like, at least you've got one.
Yeah.
You know, at least you've had the experience of motherhood.
Yeah.
I mean, I would try and, I don't know, look for the upside, and that is something stupid that I would say.
You see, that's such a positive thing coming from somebody who's probably never had any children. And it's a very sweet thing to say in comfort, but it doesn't really help. It sort of opens up a flood of more emotion.
Yeah, it highlights the issue that people don't know what to say. They don't know what's going to be hurtful.
Yeah.
Anyway.
There's a very fine line there, and people do try to be of comfort. It's just that they really, really don't know what to say.
We're just bad at it.
They insist on saying something.
Yeah. Catherine, thank you so much for the call.
Thanks. Bye.
It's true. We seldom know what to say. And when in doubt, stick both feet in your mouth is kind of the route we tend to go. From Centurion, Vera, good morning.
Good morning. I just want to say I'm a woman that is, to use the term that you're using, infertile, and we tried and tried, and I've got wonderful friends, and my friends, according to your program now, said the wrong things, but you know, to me it was such a comfort. So I think we mustn't be overly sensitive, and we adopted last year our second child, a little boy, and he is such a blessing. Our first child is a little girl, and yes, so if you can't have a biological child, you can be blessed with wonderful, wonderful other children. Nobody needs to know they're adopted. People often say, my little girl looks like me with red hair. So, yeah, that's all I wanted to say. Don't be overly sensitive. It is an issue. But I think in our own minds, we make it a massive mountain. And I think we mustn't.
Vera, I think you're absolutely right. Thank you for calling. Doctor, that is one of the problems. It's like men and their erections. You know, that defines them as a man. Having babies defines us as a woman, and it's not entirely so.
Yes, I think what's interesting about the last caller, though, is that she was close enough to her friends to get that support and to know that they mean well. You know, I think a lot depends on the quality of the relationship. Sometimes people say things that it comes across as quite uncaring and flippant, a sort of do it this way and you'll be all right. So what I'd like to say is that I feel that there are a couple of pointers for what one should do in terms of the etiquette of dealing with someone who's going through infertility treatment. And the first obvious one is to say to that person, if you've got a close relationship with them, is there anything I can do to help and support you? Friends need support, and the person usually will tell you if you've got that relationship. The other is to be very sensitive around pregnancy announcements from other people, anything to do with pregnancy or christenings or post-birth or baby showers, to be sensitive and to let that person know beforehand and to give that person the choice as to whether they're going to, want to be involved or not. Because I think sometimes it's very difficult for someone who's facing, fertility issues to be involved around someone who's been successful. Listen to what someone's going through can be an enormous support for anyone.
Especially since we've already decided that every time we open our mouths, we put our foot in it. Rather just do the listening. So you're not saying shield them. You're not saying hide the fact that you may be pregnant or someone close to you is pregnant. Just be sensitive in how you tell them.
Yes, and also ask them if they need any help from you. And they will say... You know, often people can say, actually, there's nothing you can do, but it's so nice to be asked.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I'll contact you when I feel I need to talk, you know. But I think it's the genuine concern and love and support that the caller mentioned, her friends got her through a situation.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think as a society, we can all try to be more caring to each other. And each person has got their individual take on a situation of fertility problems. So knowing that person and understanding that person, I think, is a tremendous thing in a friendship, you know, which is what, Tertia's article in the magazine, in the Shape magazine, was about, how to be a friend to someone who's going through this problem.
Okay, we've only got a couple of moments left before the end of the show. I'm going to say goodbye to Dr. Alison Sampson. Doctor, thank you so much for joining us. Dr. Alison Sampson is a clinical psychologist. She's also a member of the Fit Pregnancy Advisory Board. I'm hanging on to Tertia because we want to find out about her book, and there are a couple more people who would like to speak to her. It's 22:12. We're chatting to Tertia Elberton. She's an author who struggled to have a baby. She also writes articles for Shape magazine. Charlene is on the line from Frischhoek and would like to speak to you, Tertia. Hello, Charlene.
Hi there. Just as a comment, I was quite shocked to hear the description of what infertility is, you know, not being able to fall pregnant within a year. And my partner and I struggled for 5 years, and I think once you start getting disappointed every month, your mind does have a major effect on the possibility of falling pregnant, you know. It was only after he had a very near-death experience that he came back and he says, you know, life is so important. We need to have a baby. We've got to grow our family. And within 2 months, because our minds were ready to fall pregnant then. It didn't matter about the 5 years before that. Our minds were now ready to accept that we needed a baby and we fell pregnant straight away. I think, you know, disappointment and despondency plays a big part. If you get your mind focused and try and get over that disappointment every month, it, you know, it does help a lot.
Mm. Well, congratulations, Charlene. Thanks for the call. That must be one of the most difficult things, Tish, is actually getting your mind straight when, you know, it's so one track as it is.
It is hard, and I think some people might have minor issues, and but if you've got major medical issues that are causing your infertility, then, you know, sometimes you do need to actually do something about
yeah.
it.
So. Yeah.
I'm pleased for her.
I wanted to ask you actually quite the other way around. When you said 1 year, I thought women must start to feel something's wrong or get nervy a lot before 1 year.
They do, but that's kind of the medical definition. Although I must add that if you're over 35, it's 6 months. Then you should be looking again to see somebody.
Oh.
So, you know, because we hear in the media that this person got pregnant when they were 42 or 45,
yeah.
A lot of people take their fertility for granted, but after 35, it does decline.
We've got some SMSs from people, and I don't want to get into them, but saying exactly that. My husband wants to wait, but I'm so nervous of waiting because what if I have problems and then I'm older? And it is something that worries women. Doug's calling from Hyde Park. Hi, Doug.
Good morning. I think infertility must be a soul-destroying thing for any young couple. But perhaps we need a change of mindset in this country. We have more orphans in South Africa than I think any other country in the world. Have any of these unfortunate couples ever considered adopting?
Doug, I didn't even have to ask those couples. I have no doubt they have considered it.
Hmm. I've spoken to so many couples who have adopted, and I'm absolutely certain that the love that these parents feel for their adopted child is no less than the love for a biological child. And
absolutely.
Just maybe in this country, there needs to be a rethink. Rather than all this spending of money on all these tests and everything, there are children that are desperate for loving parents.
Okay.
There are parents that are desperate for children. Is the biological aspect of it all that important? Is it all that critical?
Tertia, before you answer, and Doug, thank you for the call, and thank you for putting it the way you did. Just take a deep breath for me, Tertia, because we got two SMSs in, and I'd like to read them to you, although they made me bulk. I don't know what they're going to do to your stomach.
Okay.
The one says, to every infertile couple, I say, stop acting like spoilt children. Just accept that you can't always get what you want and visit an orphanage. But the message is pretty much the same, as nasty as it is. And then the other one came in from Godwin, why all the depression, sensitiveness, and bitchiness? Can't a bloody woman accept a condition? I don't think that the human race is in any threat of becoming extinct anytime soon.
Well, first of all, I'd be interested to see how many of them have their own biological children.
And whether their children still speak to them since they're such lovely, sensitive people.
Yes, yes. That's me. Adoption is not easy. Nobody just adopts. First of all, there's a process that you go through to get to that decision of adopting. But it's not an easy process. There's all sorts of things involved. And in fact, I did try and adopt. I went through the whole procedure. I did my parents-to-be profile. I got in touch with a social worker. I did the whole thing. And that was what I was going to do. And I waited and waited. And the government adoption agencies, the waiting list is 3 years. Private is about a year. And in the meantime, I did my last IVF and it was successful. But I did try.
Yeah, it was something that you looked into.
Most people do.
Is it a process, you know, opening your mind to adoption?
It is. I mean, you know, giving up your sort of biological roots is difficult. You know, I mean, surely there must be most people, when they think of a child, they think, oh, I'd like my child to have my eyes or see my father's hair or whatever. So there's a process you go through in giving up the idea of your biological child. But I would have done anything. I considered donor eggs. I considered adoption. I would have done anything to have a child.
Mm.
But it's not easy. No one just adopts.
Mm. Certainly not. Doug, thank you very much for your question. And I think that Tertia has answered it there. Tertia, we're running out of time. I want to chat a little bit about your website and your book very quickly. At the beginning of the last hour, at the beginning of the show, I said, you know, here's this woman. She's got this website. And it's I mean, by your own admission, mainly now about the children and how they're doing. So I thought, well, that must obviously just be for family and friends overseas. Who else would read that? And then I saw you got about 25,000 hits a week.
Yeah, I honestly don't know why people want to read what I write, but they do. It's a blog. I'm not sure if you know what a blog is.
No.
It basically, a blog is a personal website, and you write on it every day or every week, half when you want to, and you write about your life. And so I write all sorts of things, about my children and other things, and, you know.
And it gets all these hits.
And it gets all these hits.
And, I mean, what do you think it could possibly be?
My funny personality.
That's it, absolutely. I was hoping you were going to say people need support.
Oh, well, you know, it's difficult because for infertile people, no one would want to go on a website and read about someone's twins.
Okay.
So I have lost a lot of my fertility challenged readers.
Yeah.
Understandably so.
Okay, but there was sort of that need to connect with someone else who's going through the same thing.
Yes, and there are people who have blogs where they blog about their infertility treatments. There are plenty of them out there.
Yeah. Okay, well, we're going to get those details in case you want to catch up on Tertia's twins, see how they're doing, and we'll make sure that that gets onto our website. Meanwhile, the book, that's obviously about your journey.
It is about my journey, yes. It's due out in August. It's called So Close. And it's my story of coming so close each time to having a child and then eventually succeeding.
Okay, so due out in August, all major bookstores?
I hope so.
Indeed. And it's called So?
Close.
So Close.
Yes.
Okay, and it's all about your journey. Tertia, thank you so much for joining us. Final, and I know, you know, one of the things that you do in your articles, and I'm sure it's in the book as well, is tips, survival tips, and lessons to learn as you go along if you're going to be a friend to someone who battles to have a baby. But in short?
Ask them how you can be a friend to them and how you can support them.
Okay. Back to communication. Why does that keep coming up? I'm seeing this threading through everything. Tertia, have a lovely weekend. Big kisses to both your children, and thank you for chatting to us.
Thank you, Lee.
Tertia Albertine, who is the author of So Close, and it's not out yet, only coming out in August. She struggled to have a baby. She went through 9 attempts, and finally she got her twins, a little boy and a little girl. Don't forget, if you want her website, your blog, whatever it's called, I am absolutely just, I'm so technologically challenged, you have no idea, but you can go to 702.co.za and capetalk.co.za. The other thing, I can't find it. I was going to say that I read it, and I had to tell you before I closed this segment. I had to tell you, but I can't. Oh, that was it, that they say you've just got to acknowledge when someone's struggling. Just say, I know how difficult, or this must be difficult for you, or I can see you're struggling. Just acknowledge that what they're going through is difficult. Apparently that's incredibly helpful. That's one of the things that came up over and over again in the research I did.